Okay, good morning. I am going to be really, really mean and nasty, and I'm going to ask those who are in like some of the back rows if you could move up, because this isn't going to be a class where I'm going to be the only one speaking. I'm going to need your participation. Okay, so if I could get some people to move from the back to near the front so that we could be kind of more together, that would be fantastic. Yes, this is the example right here. Sorry, guys. I know you hate the move. You're all comfy in your little spots. Some of you might have been sitting there for 40 years. Now I'm making you get up and move. I'm sure I'll hear about it. All right. Hey, I really appreciate it. I just want to lessen the obstacles between you and me. Okay. What we're going to do today is what I promised we would do yesterday. Hopefully, who was here yesterday? Just raise your hand. Okay, so most people were here yesterday. Okay, well, welcome to those who weren't here. We had a good day yesterday. Yeah, we did. And I guess we'll find out this morning, because what I did at the very beginning of yesterday was handed out a one sheet of paper, because he's even just unwrinkling it from his Bible, And what we were saying to do is, basically, there were three little sections on, right? One for each class, and it was, hey, we said a lot of stuff yesterday, how do we make it practical for our lives, right? So, we learned a lot about the Levites, we learned to do some, hopefully some pretty good Bible study, and looking at some of the amazing families, Korah, Asaph, some other people that were pretty amazing families, right? People stood up for what was right, even though it was tough. And a whole bunch of other lessons, right? And then we said, now we gotta make this real. We gotta make it, let's put it in 2014, let's put it into our lives, how do we become like the Levites? So it was a simple exercise, right? It required you to say, this is what I learned on the left-hand side of this paper, and on the right, this is what I'm gonna do about it. This is how I'm gonna change my life. So, I wanna go through that today. That was just for those who weren't here yesterday. That's why you might be like, what are we doing this morning? That's what we're doing. So we're gonna have a discussion. It's gonna be an organized discussion. And Stephen, when am I, like, done this class? 10 o'clock. Okay, good. So we got 45 minutes. That's good. So I think the meanest thing I could do wasn't actually to get you to go to the front, but actually to get you to discuss this morning. And that's what we're going to be doing, so I apologize up front. I'll make it a little easier on you. First of all, I have an advantage. I have a cafe coffee, which will help me. I'm sorry I didn't get one for every one of you. The Pittsburgh budget didn't allow for it. But what we're going to do is I'm going to tell a personal story, first of all, so you don't have to talk, you can just listen. And then I want to outline the importance of making our Bible study practical. So, you're just saying, well, like, okay, this is great that we're doing this, but why? Is it really that important to see if the Bible can actually change our lives? Is it really that powerful of a book, right? So I want to go through a few verses I think are powerful and that helped me, since I was a young person. I don't know if I can really call that anymore. So that's what I want to do. So I want to start off with an example from my life of where I found it really, really difficult to take the hypotheticals of life and turn them into reality. Okay, and maybe you'll understand when I go through this. So when I was probably 20, maybe 20, yeah, 20 I think it was, and by the way, this is going to be totally honest, so please bear that in mind as I go through this. So when I was about 20, I was in school at University of Waterloo, and I think I was in the second or third year. I was in third year university. Yeah, third year university. And I was probably around $20,000 in debt, okay, for school and all the rest, and made some poor decisions, but also the how school cost so much. So the $20,000 in debt, I didn't really know what I was going to do. I was doing a history degree, so I was like, probably a teacher, because that's what everyone does when it goes into history. So that's what I thought I would be doing when I got it, but I didn't really know. I didn't really understand what I was going to do. All I knew was that I had a whole bunch of debt and I didn't know what to do. So I was in a class one day in school, and a clipboard went around the classroom. Just went around, and I just saw it coming up the back of where I was sitting in the classroom. And so when it got to me, I saw there's a few names on it and a few phone numbers. And it said, if you want to start your own business, and if you want to make $50,000 to $60,000 this summer, sign your name here, and we'll get in contact with it. I was like, that's awesome, that's like amazing. So I definitely signed up, put my name there, my phone number, And got a call, I think it was that day or the next day, and they said, okay, we'll come to this room at the University of Waterloo, and we'll explain what this is all about. I was like, so psyched. I was like, this is great. Like, this is what I need, right? I'm desperate. I don't know where I'm going. What a great idea. I'd love to be an entrepreneur. I'd like to run my own business. So I get there, and in Canada, they have this business called Student Works Painting. Okay? I don't know if they probably have the same equivalent down here for college students, where basically, for the summer, you own your own painting franchise, where you paint internal and external on the houses and anything else you can find, commercial places. And basically what they do is they give you some of the skills to learn how to run a business, how to hire people to paint for you, how to sell and close, right, how to sell a paint job to a homeowner, how to do a quote or an estimate on how much the painting's going to cost, how you're going to make money off of that. Fantastic! I was like, this is great! This is going to be so good! I can use these skills everywhere! And that has come true, right? I definitely can use those, some of those skills that I learned back then. So I was like, this is the best scenario ever. I'm not only going to pay off my debt, but I'll have like $45,000 to $50,000 left over. Man, I am like going to live off of that. So, you know, I had all these great ideas. So, I don't know, I'm 16 now, I'm 20, 21, right? So, sometimes lessons, like we talked about yesterday, the school of hard knocks, we all kind of go through. So, this was my hard knock. So, here I am. I get to the beginning of the summer. And what they said is, get all your estimates of painting up front. So, you want to get all your painting jobs lined up for the summer. So, go and try and sell them all in between, like, probably like April, March, all the way to June when you're out of school. So, I went around estimating like mad, signing people up for, you know, getting contracts written. And I basically had the whole summer lined up. Hire some students, start teaching them how to paint. I'm like doing some like test jobs on my mom's house. You know, so, like, not doing the best. But she's okay with it. The whole record woman is that. So we're all learning, it's great. Summer starts, I'm out of school, and now it's like go time, right? You only have a certain amount of weeks to make that $50,000 to $60,000. And by the way, before I signed up for this, and this is a legal contract for you on scratch house. And if you say I quit, you owe them $6,000 to begin with. Off of that. So, if I signed up and then said, I don't think I want to do it, I'd be on the hook for $6,000. So, that starts out to look so good, but I'm still not aware of that, because I'm wearing these glasses that are rose-colored, and everything's good for the summer. So, I started the summer. Absolute disaster of the summer. I have one of my students who's painting, well, not a student, but a student at the university that I'm hiring. He's at the top of, like, a grand staircase, okay? And he's painting trim along the staircase. Let's say the stairs start here, and they go down that way. So he's painting along the trim here. And he has this big gallon of paint right behind him. The wife is down in the kitchen, like downstairs, okay? All beautiful carpet. He starts going like this backwards painting. Boom! Takes this gallon of paint. And I'm downstairs in the living room painting down there. And the wife shoots this bucket, goes, and paint's going everywhere, and the lady's like in the kitchen with the fridge door open. She sees this go by, and she looks at me and she says, so you're gonna pay for that, right? I was like, of course. So that happened. Another man, another guy that I had, he fell off a ladder in the bathroom, and he actually fell onto a toilet and broke it. Now he was actually okay, but he had to pay for the toilet. This is what the summer was all like. I'll spare you the rest of the details because I feel like I'm about to cry, but by the end of the summer, I had managed a business so badly. First of all the estimates were up front, so I did them all poorly and didn't make any money off the jobs that I did do, because I didn't really know how to estimate, so I was always going on the small side. Didn't make any money from that. I owed my painters money. Basically, by the end of the summer, I was $40,000 in debt. I actually lost another $20,000. And I was absolutely, like, devastated, right? I didn't know what I was going to do. I was in a worse position than I thought I was ever going to be. And I could have worked at McDonald's and made more money that summer, right? So, just showed you where I was. I was depressed. I was definitely not in a good place spiritually. And I didn't know what I was going to do. So what did I end up doing? I quit school because I couldn't go back. I had no money. And I started working at a Ford factory. And taught me a lot, right? So, you know, kind of starting right at the bottom of grinding metal off of chassis of Ford 3-stars, and basically just making a small wage, and it was a brutal job, right? And it taught me a lot.
I worked there for about a year, and then went back to school and finished up my degree and got myself out of debt. The way I got myself out of debt is by marrying Sarah, who decided to sell her piano in order to pay for my debt. So that's the lesson. Don't worry about it, guys. If you get into debt, you can always marry rich women and you'll be fine. So that's the moral of the story. Now you're like, what does that have to do with anything, right?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with my naivety about how things really work and about translating hypothetical skills that I might have been learning into reality. I absolutely failed at this business, but it looked perfect on paper. How can I fail? Right? And let me tell you, Student Works Painting, the main office, they made their money off of me. Right? But I was the one that lost out because I didn't read really into how this really works. And I made a poor decision based on that.
So when I look back at that experience, I think about a lot of missed opportunities to sit back and really look at it and say, what is a really wise decision that I could make here? Why am I just tuning out my father who's saying this is a bad deal? Why am I tuning out others that might have had concerns? Why aren't I reading about how I could lose $6,000 even if I just quit? And I think it comes down to, I thought it was easier to practice what was hypothetical. And it wasn't.
It was so hard and so difficult. And what ended up really teaching me that was working at a Ford factory. You know, working overtime. I'm sure a lot of you have been in this kind of situation. Crummy job that teaches you, I want to go back to school. I want to try and get a different job. This is tough, right? So
that's really what we're trying to do, is translate the hypotheticals of life that we learned yesterday, which mean absolutely nothing unless you're willing to really put the work and the hard thinking behind it about how you translate that into your personal life, right? So that's kind of that's where I want to head this morning. So let's just talk a little bit about review of yesterday. So let me hear what you thought about yesterday, some of the things that you learned just off the top of your head, just to kind of refresh on what were kind of some of the big nuggets that we learned from yesterday. And just to go over it, you'll remember there's three classes. First class was who was on the Lord's side. Talked a lot about the beginnings of Levi, right, and how he did certain things that were not good, but Levi was able to turn some things around, the tribe, right, Exodus 32, the golden calf. They separate themselves. So we looked at that. Class number two, we looked at this is the service, and we talked about Korah, actually the Levite service, how they were blessed with service. And then thirdly, in the third class, we talked about the family of Korah and some of the Psalms. We talked about Asaph and his family, how they're faithful for generations and generations. But what anything that came out of it from you that you would just like to just talk about and that you remembered from yesterday or that piqued your interest? This is the part where Bill Folkers starts speaking.
Just
get the man some coffee. No.
I think what stood out to me was expectations. You didn't really use that word, but when you talk about the carts.
Some got it, some didn't.
Apostles got different carts, and some got none. And I think, at least for me, I have expectations of getting.
Interesting.
And sometimes I get none. Don't respond to that very well.
Interesting. Yeah.
I get none. And I suspect the expectation of it is not that.
Yeah.
And how to respond to that.
Interesting. Good point. Yeah.
One of the things was when they were actually pretty much had a curse from their father Jacob. And yet, it was fulfilled in the fact that everything that was said came to pass, but not in the way that they thought. It ended up being a blessing because of their perseverance that despite that, they were going to do the right thing, and it turned out being a blessing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was huge for me.
I think I like your, the Levites were rewarded with like a threefold service. And that even though sometimes it was a blessing to carry the tabernacle, it also sometimes felt like a curse, and they grumbled about it. And so sometimes in our service to God, sometimes we can see it as a blessing, but sometimes it can feel like a burden. And I kind of like how you talked about, the sons of Korah and, how they, grumbled about it, but ultimately, recognized it.
Yeah. Okay, so
That was just a little refresher, just a few things that came out for people. What I want to do now is I want to talk about, like I said, first of all, we all know that there's a lot of parallels being made between the Levites and us, right? And I've been saying we want to be like a Levite. Well, where's the parallels, right? And these are just a few that I think are pretty powerful up on the screen. And when you look at some of the New Testament verses that I think parallel really well, the Levites, we are Levites. There's so many links with the Levites and how we're supposed to join unto God, right? Which is what the Levites, what Levi means. Just that. And also like some of these points up here, right? So called to separation. There's no question about it. We know that. The same command that was given to the Levites to separate is the same for us, right? And we looked at that verse in Timothy, right? It says you're not just fleeing something. You're not just running away from something. You're running to righteousness, right? And that's your motivation to run away from whatever it is, the wickedness that you see in your own mind, or with people that you know, or in tough situations at work, whatever it might be. You're fleeing those things, but there's a purpose behind it. It's to pursue after God's righteousness, right? That's why we're doing it. Same for us as it was for the Levites, who did it physically. We think of Korah, the sons of Korah, running from the tents of wickedness. And then you have a covenant, right, to God. God's made a covenant with us, hasn't he? Right? A beautiful covenant. We've been grafted in, as it were, into the covenants or into the promises to Abraham by faith. Right? So there's a promise and a covenant that God's made that we can be a part of. And all those who are baptized here have become a part of that. Right? As long as we continue to believe and we obey. And then as we go down, we can see they were called near to the presence of God. Remember the Levites, one of their biggest tasks was to basically live around the tabernacle in the heart of the nation of Israel. Right there in the wilderness, right? They were encamped all around it as gatekeepers. And there they were. At the heart of spiritual worship in Israel. That was their job. And that's what we want to be. We want to be as close to God as we possibly can. Right? We don't want to dwell on the extremities of the camp. We want to be right in the middle of it. In whatever form that takes. Whether you're an extrovert or an introvert, whatever your role is in the ecclesia or in your family, you want to try and find your niche. Try and find how you can be helpful to those around you in your ecclesia and how you can be closer to God, right? So that's really what is being talked about, I think, about being called nearer to the presence of God. That's our task. That's our objective. Our closest relationship in our lives should be with our Heavenly Father, even though we can't see Him, and sometimes it's difficult. But He's left a pretty clear message for us to understand Him. Firstborn among brethren. I think this is a very interesting one. We talked yesterday about how, in some ways, the firstborn were usually crummy, right? And they were usually replaced by someone else, right? We've looked at Esau and Jacob. Look how David was the firstborn of his family. He was one of the greatest kings of Israel, or the greatest king of Israel, until Jesus comes. So, you know, we have a lot of these ideas about how the firstborn was usually rejected, and someone else filled in the spot, and God was trying to say, hey, it's not about your strength, it's about me working through your weakness, right? So I'm going to set up these people that you might not think would be the firstborn, or you wouldn't think would be the ones to kind of carry the banner, but they're going to. And really, we are in the firstborn, which is Jesus, right? We're a part of that body. And Jesus was the firstborn who was not rejected. You think about, there's Adam, right? Literally the firstborn creation of God, rejected, right? And then Jesus Christ, literally the firstborn of God, right? The only begotten of the Father. And so we're in Him. So we're kind of in that same position. And then lastly, when we look at basically the Levites, there was no tribute money for them. And when you think about, well, 1 Peter 1, verse 18 and 19 talks about the precious blood of the Lord Jesus Christ, and that's how we're redeemed. There was no price you could put on it, our redemption. There was no way that we could be redeemed with a certain amount of money or something else. It was through the precious blood of the Lord Jesus that we're redeemed. So there's a lot of parallels between the Levites and us. We are Levites, or we should be striving to be Levites. So I think that's pretty clear. So let me just take a few examples, two verses actually, I guess, right here, that really speak to me about personal change when it comes to our relationship with God. We talked about how we want to be closer to God like the Levites were supposed to be. Well, we need to be there too. And it doesn't matter if you're 10 or 12 or 14 or you're 80 or 90. We talked about this yesterday. Spiritual growth is a reality in our lives, and it should be, right? It doesn't matter how young or old you are. Spiritual growth should be something that's always there. It's a progressive thing, right? And yeah, we take a lot of steps back sometimes, but we should continually be seeking to improve our relationship with God, trying to overcome barriers that are there between us and Him. And that's a tough battle, and every one of us knows that, but that's our goal. That's our goal, right? And I just want to take you to a couple examples. One is Romans chapter 12. So this is Paul speaking, right? And that's why, this is why you would have seen the picture of the caterpillar at the beginning of the slides here. That caterpillar was doing what we were doing yesterday, right? So in the picture, he was eating away at the milkweed. It was a monarch butterfly caterpillar. And he's eating away at the milkweed, right? Getting as fat and chubby as he can. Why is he doing that? Why is the caterpillar eating as much as he can and on that plant? What's coming up in his life? He's going to change. He's going to be a butterfly, a beautiful butterfly, right? That's what's going on in, not in his mind, but in his life. He's not thinking it through because he's just doing what he does. But think about that. Yesterday was kind of like we're eating. We're just like mowing down on this good word here. And then today is the day that we need to transform ourselves, okay? So when we read Romans 12, can someone read verses 1 and 2, please? Thank you. So, those are powerful words, right, brothers and sisters? Those are powerful words because they speak to the importance of choosing which road you're going to take, just like the Levites. Are you going to conform? Over and over and again, right, we see that the Levites, or pieces of the Levites, do not conform. You had Phinehas, right, and the Simeonite woman, man and the Midianitish woman. And you had Phinehas, right, who says, no way, I'm not conforming to it. You had the Levites as a tribe, right? Who is on the Lord's side? They come over and they say, we're not going to be conformed to everyone else who is worshiping a golden calf. You had the sons of Korah who were like, I'm not going to be conformed to my father's rebellion. I'm going to leave those tents. Instead, what all those people were thinking was what we should be thinking, which is, how can I transform my life by the renewing of my mind that you present your bodies a living sacrifice? Right? Which is an oxymoron. A sacrifice is dead, right? When you slay a lamb and then you offer it as a sacrifice, it's dead. But our task is to live the sacrifice that Jesus actually went through every day. Which means, don't live for me, live for others. And it's not just that, it's the motivation behind it, which is, I love you. I want to do this for you. Even though it's tough, even though it gives me some blisters on my shoulders when I'm carrying these through the wilderness, right? Through the tabernacle. Like the sons of Korah, or like the Kohathites. So, that's really what it's all about, right? So we present ourselves a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is our reasonable service. And this is a New King James that says it's the rational thing to do. It's the rational service. It's what makes sense. And it's true, right? It doesn't make sense in any other context when you think about it from a fleshly perspective. It makes no sense that I should be serving all you. That I should be working to try and find your needs and trying to meet those needs. That doesn't make any sense. How do I get anywhere doing that? What is in that for me, right? We hear that all the time in business. What's in it for me? If there's nothing in it for me, then I'm not going to go too far for you. Because what do I gain from it, right? That's not the life of a believer at all. It's actually the opposite, right? I should never try and limit myself to how much I should be doing for you. Because Christ didn't do that. He went to the cross. And every day before that, for those around him. How many times do you have compassion on the multitudes and speak to them? But wonderful things about the gospel, about the kingdom coming, right? So that's our mission as well. So we need to be transformed, right? Transfigured into that beautiful butterfly that God can work with. And so that's how it works. So this is the other ones that, if I think about spiritual growth, Ephesians 4 is probably the most powerful set of verses for me. And you might have your own that you think about when you think about, hey, I need to be getting closer to God every day and I need to be growing. And you might have a verse that you want to share after this one. But to me, these verses speak so powerfully. And it's all about the put on and the put off principle, right? What are you putting off in your life and what are you replacing that with to be more like Christ? Right? And that's what it says. This is all a type of baptism, right? And it says there in let's start there at verse 20. You have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct, the old man, which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. So, those are great verses to encapsulate what we should be trying to do every day. There's all kinds of things that we know that we shouldn't be doing. We yell at our kids, right? We think things that we shouldn't. We're not nice to our wife or our husband. We are lazy. We do too much of something that we probably shouldn't. You can think of a million things, right? And we can get into that when we're talking about the practical things that we learned yesterday. But this is beautiful because it tells you don't just take off things, but put them on, right? And then he gives you practical examples. Verse 25. Therefore, so if you got a problem with lying, therefore putting away lying, so you're going to put that off with the old man, right? The man of the flesh. Put that off. Let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. So what are you replacing lies with? You're replacing it with the truth. Now that might seem really obvious, right? But that's a tough thing to do. The truth. The truth is like the full Monty. It's not like just a little bit of the truth. It's like, this is me. I'm replacing these lies. I'm replacing these kind of deceitful things that I'm doing. Now I'm telling you who I really am. This is what I'm all about. Warts and all, right? And that makes us vulnerable. That's a difficult thing to do, but that's what we're being called to do. What about if you're angry? Well, you can still be angry, but don't sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Right? So if you have an issue, if you're angry at someone, you can put off that and replace it with dealing with the issue. Before the sun goes down. Now. Deal with it now. Right? Don't let it be something that curdles in your life and gets worse and worse and leads you to dislike that person. So you can see this is beautiful. This is exactly what we want to do this morning. So we'll leave those there. There's more examples there if you keep going. Take a look at this. I just want to take a look. I said two verses. I meant four. Let's go to Proverbs 4:18. One more example of how important it is to continue to grow. We're never done, right? We're never done. We looked at those verses in Luke 17 yesterday where Jesus is talking about increasing our faith. He basically says, look, you haven't even started with faith until you've gotten past the commitment to serve and to not stop serving, right? It's the starting line. So if you go to Proverbs 4:18, can someone read that?
But the path of the righteous is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day.
Beautiful. Right? So that's it. That's the path of the righteous. Well, do we want to be on that path? And if we do, it needs to start shining brighter and brighter each day. And if you're like me, sometimes the light's under a bushel. Sometimes the light is flickering out. But the message here is let's keep trying to make that light brighter and brighter as we head towards God's kingdom. And then lastly, look at this message in 1 Thessalonians. Once again, this is Paul speaking. Paul's speaking to the ecclesia in Thessalonica. And what he says here I find very interesting, right? So he's actually complimenting the Thessalonicans, or the Thessalonians, right? He's actually complimenting them on something that they're doing really well. And this is good. This is a good thing. But take a look, verses 9 to verse 10. Actually, read verses 9 to 11. Who's can someone else read that?
But as touching brotherly love, we need not that I write unto you. For ye yourselves are taught God to love one another. And indeed, ye do it toward all men which are in all Macedonia, but we beseech you, brethren, that ye increase more and more, and that ye study to be quiet and to do your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you.
Okay, thank you. So look at this, right? He's like, look, you don't even need me to tell you about brotherly love because you do a great job of it. Why didn't he just put a period on that and move on? Because he's saying, you're doing a great job, but you could always do better. I urge you to increase more and more, right? It never ends, brothers and sisters. It never ends. So, and I think that's the beauty of the truth. We can always continue to transform day by day. And that's our calling. That's what we're being asked to do, just like the Thessalonians. So, Okay, so those are my four verses, just about the importance of spiritual growth and how it comes up in Scripture. I'm sure there's a lot more. Does anyone have any verses that they go to in their mind when they think about, I need to change, what's a powerful verse to you?
By the renewing of your mind, right?
Yeah.
Is that the one we just read?
Well, no, the second part, though. You got 2 Timothy 3:16 in there, right?
Okay. About God's Word? That's a great one. You want to read that one, Julia? 16:17 too? That's so beautiful today, right? Korah and the Levites? Yeah. Great.
Galatians 2:20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. So, we are not our own. We're God's chosen, and we need to be a light of Jesus to whoever we come in contact with. So they should meet us, and therefore meet Jesus as well.
Great. Awesome. So, I think those are great. I'm sure each of you have verses that you kind of go to when you think about what I should be doing, how I should be growing spiritually. I think those are just a few, and those are great. I'm just going to write those down myself just to remember. What I'd like to do is just spend the next, I guess, 10 minutes. What I was going to do is break through into groups, but you're going to talk a bunch, which is great. So, I don't think I need to do that. I don't think they were going to let me rearrange the pews. So, what I'd like to do is just go back to a little bit of what we did before, which is what I was going to do is break up into groups, and then in your group, come back after the group with like the number one, this is what we learned, this is what we're taking away. But why don't I just do that with you now, and we'll just talk it through as we go, if that makes sense. I'd just love to hear what you wrote down, or what you're thinking about right now that maybe you didn't write down, but you're thinking about. Just go ahead if you have one. Yeah, Julia?
Well, last night we were talking about your class, and we were talking about how strong peer pressure is. And, you know, especially having like old people, you know, and how, like you were saying, you know, don't conform even when you have a hard choice to make, and it's really hard. And we talked about how that can be very isolating for a child, you know, and that we are asking our children and ourselves to make things, make choices that might make us isolated and scared and alone sometimes, but it's for the right purpose. And I think that that's what, I mean, like you said, was what the Levites had to do. They had to, like, go put their hand to their brother. I mean, that's not an easy choice to make.
Yeah, that's a ridiculously hard choice. It makes most of our choices feel a little easier. Right? You know about that?
Yeah. Probably harder to do when it's my own choices that are part of the truth.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, conforming. We're not conforming. But peer pressure, I think, is what you're talking about, Julia.
I like the point about Jacob's blessing of cursing of Simeon and Levi, and they didn't give up. Levi overcame the curse and actually triggered Moses to give up the blessing.
Don't give up, I guess, would be the lesson. Is that what you're... What are bad things look?
You don't have to be a victim of your circumstances, right? Because they were... had a bad family, they didn't live that legacy, they chose to be different.
Let me ask a question. This way, maybe I'm probing a little too much, so don't speak up if you don't want to, but who feels like they've come from that kind of background where they have broken a curse? Where maybe there was a background that was tough, maybe parents were tough, maybe just the situations were tough, and you feel like you've kind of broken that. Who feels like they've done that in their lives? I mean, I'll put my hand up, definitely. Don't think about my parents were crying, that's all I was saying.
There's, obviously my parents weren't so horrible or anything. But I mean, we put ourselves into situations that are really detrimental, and we can cause a curse for ourselves.
Right, right.
That ends up being bad for a lot of people around us, whether it's family, friends, whatever, and trying to dig out of that is very difficult.
Right.
And you can end up being in a situation where you're a victim of your own circumstance, where you put yourself into a bad position and you just stay there, or you can fight to get through that and make it better situation. As difficult as it is, I mean, what the Levites did is the best one in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Go back on that all the time. I think that's amazing. Simeon just kind of went along with it. This is our destiny. And Levi was determined to change that. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's good. Anything else about that?
I think sometimes, as Christadelphians, sometimes we get caught up with ourselves, maybe. I mean, I guess speaking for myself, not for everyone else, but you think because you know the truth about, and because you believe in all the first principles, that you become immune to situations around you sometimes, and you don't understand why God does things, or what His purpose may be. You know, but somebody in the not so recent, or I mean, in the very recent past, you know, I was like, why is this happening to me? And they said, why not? You know, it's like, who are you? Why would you come to your immune, you know, to something like that? And so it's just kind of like, an eye opener. You realize that you know that God does these things for a reason, and although you don't understand the reason at the time, everything happens.
Yeah, right. That's really good. Grant, you said a lot of really great things, but one of the things you said was change your perspective on what happens in your life, right?
My favorite verse is Scripture, most everybody here knows, is Romans 8:28, and all things work together for good, but then it's about God.
Oh, wow.
His purpose. And
like sums up
even the terrible things that we go through and believe, either through our own weakness and stupidity, or that are observed on us from outside, just, God can bring good out of all that if we do let Him work with us. You know, and I always think the contrast between Peter and Judas, you were saying about giving up.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Judas gave up.
Yeah.
You know, he gave up when he knew he'd done something terrible.
Huh.
Peter, you know, didn't give up, you know. And I think just sticking with it, my own personal definition of faith is hanging on when nothing makes sense.
That's good.
And, you know, God does bring good out of some terrible situations. He sometimes takes us years to see that good. You know, and in any case, it can bring good for us, even if it doesn't. You know, you think Job went through all this terrible suffering, but it wasn't just for his benefit, it was for the benefit of others.
Right, right.
And that can happen in our lives, too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think Tim, or Jane there, I think all those are real for all of us, but at least for me, I try to fix my own problem. So if I created that situation, I put myself, I think I fix my problem. But like you had started off, I've got to put off that even that thing. And realize that I gotta just surrender and do what Mary Jane's saying is let God remedy it through me. That Christ, let Christ work through all of the things I did wrong and through those weaknesses to make it glory to His name. Not that I can fix it, but that He allowed Him to fix it.
Yeah.
One of the things I was thinking of, I didn't get a chance to say when we were putting the verses up there, was passage of James. I don't remember what the verse is written in James somewhere about the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much.
Awesome. Prayer. That's huge. Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of how the Psalms were, weren't they? That's right. So we know Korah and Asaph and many others, David, for definitely given the prayer.
I think just to build on some of the things other people have said, but Nehemiah and Philippians 3, you know, Paul talks about pressing for the mark of the prize of high calling. And he goes on to say, if anything, you be otherwise minded, God will reveal it unto you. And it seems like sometimes for me, to Bill's point, I get focused on how am I going to fix this. And there's a counterintuitive nature to our faith in that the way we allow God to, we can't change ourselves.
in effect, right? God has to do it. God changes us through simple obedience. We obey, and in the process of obeying, following, that we become changed in the process. So if we set our sights on the things, we press for the mark of God.
Yeah.
Just by virtue, in a way, I guess it's freeing, simplifying, right? Because instead of trying to fix these big insoluble problems that, man, I don't even have the first, you know, you just feel like totally overwhelmed. It's like, well, but I can obey God in the next thing, though. I mean, even as you say, challenge for me, but like, for the most part, like, that is at least something I can wrap my head around. A decision that seems tangible and like I can process that. And I think that notion, for me, is very freeing. It's like, okay, it's not about solving the big problem. It's about doing the right thing in this moment, right here, right now. Because this is the only moment that we really have control over.
Wow, that's interesting.
I don't know how to sum that up. So pressing towards the mark and just making sure that day by day we're doing the right thing and allowing God to work in the big. You know what? That's awesome. I think of Daniel and Joseph. Like that, you know, Joseph's in prison for how long? No control over that. But he made sure that when he was in prison, he was doing the right thing. He was, clearly
doing the right thing. Things with it. In both cases, God was able to do incredible things, not because they planned for God to do incredible things.
Yeah.
But because they were diligently doing the right thing.
Yeah.
God could put them to use them.
That's a really good point. They didn't have a huge strategy to become like second in command of Egypt or Babylon, I guess, but that's what God did through their righteousness or through their obedience. Yeah. Wow. That's really good. Thanks. I think we're out of time, and I'm sure you had lots more comments. One thing, maybe I'll just say one thing that I think I've learned. The struggle in my life right now, I would say, and probably if Sarah was here, probably she's in the back, probably say the same thing, which is how do you balance life? And when we look at Korah, that message speaks to me so much about when they're in the wilderness. I know I've talked to Julia, Mother, and Ryan about this a few times. When they're in the wilderness, and Korah, the sons of Korah are carrying all the heavy things from the tabernacle, and the wives are with their kids, and they have an extra burden than all the other tribes. How do they balance that? How do you work in the difficult situations of life where everything isn't fitting? You know, there's just too much going on. And you've already kind of tried to declutter, but then things come back in that maybe you can't even control. It could be work, could be whatever. But to me, the lesson that comes out of Korah is, I think it comes back to what you were saying, which is like, focus on the day-to-day. Don't get too carried away with thinking long-term. How far do we have to travel to where the encampment is? We don't know. We don't know that picture that God's going to put throughout our lives. We don't know where he's going to take us. We don't know the situations we're going to be in. But what we can do is we can approach every day with that can-do attitude that Korah, sons of Korah, I should say, had. And we're able to absolutely accept because God blessed them. And going back to your point, Romans 8:28 is that verse that really ties everything together, right? It's God who's working through us. So yeah, one other comment, and we'll close it.
Yeah, one thing that I thought of when giving the class yesterday is that something that comes out in the Exodus. The murmuring began in the tents. It says they murmured in their tents. And I think that's something that we're going to watch. You know, we got our most ourselves and our most inmost thoughts come out at home.
Right.
And it's something to be aware of. You know, sometimes the murmuring begins in our tents.
Very good point. Because I know you'll all be complaining about the talks this weekend when you're headed home. Wise words. Thank you. So we'll close it there, and we will reconvene when we talk about Hebrews 7 for the exhortation, where we look at something that's even bigger than the Levitical system that was in the Old Testament, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ. So that's what we'll talk about in our exhortation.